We get to make wines that are going to be different every single year because of what Mother Nature throws at us.
You're really in touch with the seasons.
This is farming. Where this all starts is agriculture.
Wine is both a representation of its place and a representation of its time.
We can't control Mother Nature.
To make really fine wine, you need to do it in the old traditional way.
It was a lot funkier back then than it is now.
We are in a creative kind of business, and so this is what makes it fun.
I really love what I do. I'm happiest, I think, when I'm in the vineyard.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle, and welcome to podcast number 141.
This week we feature Dave Boss of Boss Wines, located in Napa Valley, California. Biodynamic farming is what Dave Boss is all about, and Dave's eyes light up when talking about biodynamics. Being that he's a vineyard manager and a winemaker, I guess there should be no surprise with that. Dave owns Boss Wines and lives with his family in Calistoga, California, where he also grows several crops biodynamically. And listening to this interview, you get a good idea just how passionate he is. So I would call you vineyard management and consultant.
Sure. I also sometimes will use Supreme High Commander.
Yeah, I like that. Have you tried Alien yet? I'm here with Dave Boss, and Dave is a vineyard manager and a consultant. And he also has his own wine label. And we are here in lovely Calistoga on another stunning day here in the valley. Thanks for having us.
Well, you're welcome. It's a little warmer than I'd want it for February, but it does allow us to sit out in the garden and enjoy some wine and talk about farming.
You know when you're talking to a true vineyard manager when he's concerned about a beautiful day.
Hey, you know, what they say is farmers are just never happy, right? You know, if it was raining right now, I'd be complaining about the rain because I'd have to be out in it. And
yeah.
If it's nice out, now I'm worried about bud break coming too early. So it's weather's never perfect, but in California, it's pretty nice.
You do all right. Dave, we were talking to Aaron Weinkoff over at Spotswood, and he had asked us to talk to you because he thought it would be kind of fun to chat with you about what you do, because it is a totally different perspective about, you know, about wine. And as everybody says, wine is made in the vineyard.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Aaron and I share a lot of similar opinions when it comes to farming. And they do such a nice job over there at Spotswood. So my focus is organic and biodynamic farming. My company, Harvest Boss, I do consulting, but I also do everything from pruning to picking as well. I've been farming in Napa Valley for 10 years, and doing organics and biodynamics allows you to work with nature a little bit better. My focus with biodynamic farming is focusing on health, quality, and vitality in your vineyard. And we'll, since we do have wine open, we can really get into biodynamics. I usually tell people I can't get into biodynamics without at least one or two bottles of wine.
Ah, well, that kind of gives you the real example of what it is.
Yes.
And, you know, I think one of the important things about people when we talk about biodynamics is you're a dad. We saw your little one up in the window. Little boy, was it, right?
Yeah, we've got a 3.5-year-old girl and a 1-year-old boy.
Right. So that really makes that whole point of getting into biodynamics so much more important for someone like you. You're looking to the future, right?
Correct. And I kind of big scale, when you really look at what's going on in the country and people are spending more focus on what they eat because they see a direct connection with healthy eating is healthy lives, and you know, and that's really where I come out on it. I wouldn't say one is necessarily better than the other, but I've been doing biodynamics long enough and I've seen it do amazing things in vineyards. It's transformed soils, made sick vineyards healthy. It's always fun to have chefs here, so when they walk through my garden they taste things and they do such a good job describing biodynamics through trying different vegetables, because in the wine industry it's so easy to be, wine is so subjective, right? And we've got 52,000 people giving us their opinions at any given moment, but that chef in the kitchen, when he is tasting through different producers of arugula, there's no arugula spectator out there, right? So what does he do? He's got to rely on his senses, which everyone in the wine industry says we all do, but we all have all these opinions and we kind of come with a little baggage. So it's always fun to watch chefs or people that really know produce go through a biodynamic garden and taste things, because they end up describing the form and function of biodynamics. And it's really about taking whatever fruit or vegetable it is and making it more itself.
Obviously, just a different angle too on what you're doing. And it all comes down to one thing, farming. And I had a vineyard manager once say to me, where do your groceries come from?
Yep.
People say a supermarket. No, they don't. They come from a farmer.
Yep.
Right, which is what it's all about.
Yeah. So the first wine we have is our Eau de Fumé. Eau de is 100% Sauvignon Blanc, Napa Valley, two different vineyards, organic, biodynamic, two different sources. So not 100% biodynamic. My single vineyards are all 100% biodynamic. I love Sauvignon Blanc. As you notice, we have four wines we're going to try today, and two of them are Sauvignon Blancs. About 6 months ago, somebody said, why did you come out with two Sauvignon Blancs? I'm like, because they express themselves differently. And the Soda Creek is different than the Ode, and you'll be able to see the difference. Both are extremely well made. I'm very proud of them. And years ago, Mike Gergich, when I worked at Gergich Hills, it's probably the first month or two I was there, I looked at him and I go, why do you call it Fumé Blanc? That doesn't mean anything. And, you know, Mike Gergich very politely told me that when I have my own wine label, I can name it whatever I want. And so, hence Eau de Fumé, an ode to those people that pioneered Sauvignon Blanc in Napa Valley, and kind of an ode to other people that are crafting Sauvignon Blanc seriously right now. And I think good Sauvignon Blanc is highly underrated.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, wasn't it Mondavi who came up with that's what I thought. Cheers.
Cheers. And his winemaker was Mike Gergich.
That's right. I forgot about that. Shame on me.
So yeah, I love that. It's got that nice lime zest. It's refreshing. It's got a little bit of even passion fruit, but I don't want to pick it where it's too ripe. So the alcohol levels are lower and it's a little crisper in acidity.
Just so our listeners know, we are sitting out here in the yard and we have work going on around us, because nothing ever stops around here, does it?
Not really. So we're in Calistoga. I've got a big garden here, and then we do all biodynamic, obviously. We also raise meat chickens and pigs and egg layers and ducks, and kind of pull the whole thing together. Biodiversity is a big part of biodynamic farming. So when you kind of, everyone drives up Napa Valley and they go, oh, look at all the beautiful vineyards, right? Well, and they are. They're all beautiful, but there's a lot of them. If you're something that eats a grapevine and you come over the hill, you think this is paradise. They can eat from one end to the other. So it's really important to diversify your farm. So I usually say farm instead of vineyard, because if you can get more than one thing going, it's a farm.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, let's go back in time here, because you're originally from Michigan, as we were talking about Holland, Michigan, you said?
Yep, go Dutch.
Yeah, there you go. Were you from a farming family? Was that in your background?
No, my parents were both teachers. My first job was on a farm. I lasted one night.
What kind of farm?
It was a chicken slaughterhouse farm.
Oh,
it was my father got a lot of good laughs while I was growing up, because every time he wanted to teach me a lesson, he always had a friend at church or a friend at school where he taught. And this friend said, oh yeah, Dave's, you know, 15. He wants to make really good money. It was like 15 bucks an hour. He can come load chickens five at a time onto the truck. But if you've ever been in one of those chicken houses, I spent the first hour crying because the ammonia smell. So it wasn't exactly my best farming moment, but yeah, my dad dropped me off at 10 p.m., picked me up at 6 a.m., and just said, so how much money did you make? Was it worth it? You sure you want to have a job right now? And I went, man, I wonder how many more of these life lessons he's going to have for
he
me.
He really was a teacher, wasn't he?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well. So I didn't really get into farming until I got into wine. And I do, I love gardening now. And I like, you know, plants in general. But I got into wine in college because I worked at restaurants and, just fell in love with wine and, moved to Chicago, worked at a high end contemporary French restaurant. And back in 2000, I went, you know what? I want to work in vineyards. How am I going to do that? I'm an English and religion double major.
Yeah, right. I'm curious about that.
So I went up to Traverse City, Michigan, where I worked as a cellar rat, as a cellar master for a couple of years. And then I moved out here and then worked for Gergich. They hired me because they were starting to do biodynamics and they wanted somebody that had an open mind about it. And I did. And they gave me a lot of amazing tools and they've got great vineyards. So kind of sky was the limit at what I could learn and how fast. So I'm very thankful for them and all the opportunities I had with them. And then 2 years ago, started doing my own little vineyard management consulting. And the wine label's somewhat of a byproduct of that. Because when you work with good grapes and somebody offers them to you, it's hard to say no. And it's the one place, too, where, you know, every fall, my wife is more nervous than you can imagine. What is he going to bring home? What's he going to try to ferment? Even the first year when we just did two barrels of the Phoenix Ranch, which we'll obviously get to in a little bit, but she goes, what if we can't sell it? I go, well, it's only two barrels of wine. That's not a big deal. But now we're at 400 cases, so we do have to sell it.
Yeah. There's an investment going on.
Yeah, now. But it does very well. We've been able to sell pretty much all ourselves so far. We're branching out a little bit, but it's I enjoy selling because there's just something about pouring wine for somebody and watching you taste just now. I go, he really does like it.
You know, you can't lie about that.
Yeah.
You can't lie about not liking or liking something. So, I mean, how do you sell it then? Do you have people here for tastings or do you operate out of somewhere?
Nope. So we sell direct. I sell to some restaurants, some wine shops locally. I'm starting to get a little more into other markets, trying to come up with a game plan. Luckily, in Napa Valley, I've got a lot of friends who are national sales managers, so I can call them up and ask them all the dumb questions, and they answer me. So so this is our Soda Creek single vineyard, three barrels made, so 70 cases, all from Soda Creek Vineyards, which is down just south of Stag's Leap. It's an 11-acre vineyard that I consult for, and it's just a stunning, stunning vineyard. So as you can tell, this is a little different in style.
A lot different in style, I'd say, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A little longer on the end.
Yeah, it's there's a little bit more of that key lime pie versus lime zest like we saw a little more in the Ode. Just completely different wines. I didn't do a whole lot different. I did ferment and an egg with Ode, and Soda Creek is all barrels.
And so you are the winemaker for it then?
No, I do a lot of the grunt work though. Jillian Johnson is my winemaker. I've made homemade wine for 10 years and Jillian's been a good friend of mine. And so I can do a lot of it, but I also know that I want to put out an A+ product. And I'm a solid B, you know? but there's a lot of the science behind it that I don't always get. But our wines, wild yeast fermented, no black arts, as I like to say. I like wine to be wine, so.
As it should be. This is also very good. But I like the difference. It's amazing, though, I think, when you come to this whole idea of a wine journey, how you discover the real wines from the ones that, as you say, are kind of brought together by black magic. That's sort of a good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, and I look at Sauvignon Blanc, too, is it can be very transparent of the farming style, which I really like. And when I really look at some of those aha wines, you know, I've no doubt you're here because of a certain bottle of wine at some point grabbed you and said, there's something better going on here than just a beverage. So for me, one of those aha wines was Didier Dagneau when I was in Chicago, the Celix. It was a wine that I said, I've never had anything this awesome. And it was Sauvignon Blanc, you know?
That's kind of amazing. You don't hear that with Sauvignon Blanc often, though.
Yeah. And granted, it's a very high-end bottle, but I still, to this day, love his wines. His son Benjamin's doing it now. But, I mean, when you get into, you know, serious Sauvignon Blanc producers, they're making, I think, some of the best white wine in the world. Not just Sauvignon Blanc.
Where are they from?
Didier Dagneau is from Puy-Fumé. He passed away in 2008, so his son Benjamin's doing all the wines and farming. Now he has Persang and Celex, high-end, like $100 bottle sort of Sauvignon Blanc now. They weren't that much back then.
Yeah. Do you see yourself growing then? I mean, you already said you're up to 400 cases, so.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to grow. I always want, for me, the important thing is, because I am a farmer, I always want the wines we produce to be coming from vineyards that I'm managing or very closely related to, and I want them to be organic and biodynamic. Well, some of it is, I really love white wine. I love them both, but some of it is also living in Calistoga. Yeah. July and August, when it's 90 degrees out, maybe Gamay can swing that. My winemaker, Jillian, who would be a good person for you to meet, she makes a Cinsault from old vines. That's delicious. It's a good summertime red. But, you know, when you have those big tannin structures and you're eating a fresh tomato salad, you know, you're drinking rosé, you're drinking Sauvignon Blanc, and usually more than one bottle.
Oh, actually, one of my favorite Sauvignon Blancs is from the Calistoga area. It's Yada, made by Karen Kickbrad.
Oh.
I love that wine. That's one of my favorites.
Karen is a good friend of mine.
She's a sweetie.
You want to know a secret?
I'm all ears.
About half the ode is from her backyard vineyard.
Is it really? Back by the moose.
Yes, sorry, yeah. Karen makes amazing Sauvignon Blanc, and next year she'll be taking her vineyard back. So she was so nice to let me get the fruit for the last couple of years. So I'm going to be bummed. I'm still, Karen, angling for a way. You've seen my emails.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes, and she is doing an amazing job with Sauvignon Blanc. For sure.
I'll make sure this stays in the interview.
Yeah.
Talking about you.
Hey, yeah. You know what? I mean, that's the fun thing about the wine industry is, you know, everyone's fairly well connected, and I've got lots of friends with little labels, and I want them to do well. So.
I think there's something about the idea of having those little labels in your own particular cellar that you can crack something. Well, I've never heard of this before. It's like, let's try and see.
Yep.
People are like, wow, this is really good.
Well, I'm going down to visit with some friends later today, and I'll bring wine, and everyone will be bring wine, but almost no one will bring their own. Why? Because you kind of want to show off something new or fun or older. You know, it's the best part about living in the Valley, really, is the fact that your exposure to so many great wines, and they're all at your fingertips.
Well, wouldn't you say that's probably one of the most favorite things any wine lover likes to do is turn somebody on to another wine?
Exactly. I get just as excited when I meet people that are just learning how to taste wine for the first time, because watching that development go from, oh, it kind of smells like wine, to, oh, I do smell that. I do taste that. Is always a fun experience to be had, no matter how many times I've shown people how to taste.
You bring up a good point then, considering our goal being to try and make wine less scary for people, to let them go into a tasting room with a certain degree of confidence about what they're doing. What advice would you give to somebody, whether they be new or not quite into the deep end yet of wine?
So the fun freebie, the first one I'll give you is, when you go to a tasting room and you say you have my Soda Creek Vineyards in your glass, you drink it all and you go, that was so good, I want more. Oh, shoot, how do I say I want more in a tasting room, right? I mean, it's just a tasting. The trick is you ask to revisit the wine and they'll know exactly what you mean. I hear it all the time and I love it. It's like code for, I want seconds. But it's like a polite way of saying it.
I've never heard that before. Never.
Now you can run with it. For me, when you're tasting wine, first off, you're always right. That's the reason I got into the wine industry, because, you know, even if you don't like my wines, guess what? I still think they're awesome.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do to convince me otherwise. So it is subjective. So drink what you like, first off. And secondly, have a little fun with it. I think a lot of people, if you can kind of stare less at the adjectives that everyone wants to give them to. And, you know, if something tastes like cherry Jolly Ranchers, use that.
Yeah.
Use the vocabulary you have. It's probably not going to be gooseberries. We didn't grow up eating gooseberries, right?
God help us.
Exactly. And then just kind of come up with your own language for it. You know, I think people that are really into music, it's really fun to hear them describe wine, because there's always a melody and a harmony. You know, they can throw different words at it that I wouldn't use, but they always make sense to me. And then also kind of take notes. I mean, that's what I do. And so it's always fun to look back and realize that. And if you take wine seriously, 5-10 years down the road, your palate will change.
Absolutely.
And it's so fun to watch that, you know, so it's like, it's what I loved 10 years ago, I don't necessarily love now, but I usually still respect them and I'm excited to drink them, but you know, I've kind of evolved a little bit. So I'd say have fun with it. Lastly, acronym to remember is FAT, F-A-T. The fruit hits you at the front of the palate, the acidity in the middle, and then the tannins at the back. So when somebody says it's balanced, because I still remember when somebody said, oh, this wine's balanced, I'm like, what does balanced mean? Like, how is it balancing? What's it balancing on? Oh, it's balancing on my palate. Oh, how does that look? And then, so I thought, okay, some friends and I were sitting around and somebody came up with the acronym. I don't remember who, but FAT, F-A-T, fruit, acidity, tannin. So, you know, that's kind of, that'll help you break up where you're looking for different flavors on the palate.
I think people will connect with that too, because it does make sense when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. So this the next one we have is our Moon Boss Phase 2. It's a Syrah Zin Grenache Merlot blend, all from little vineyards I work on, 6 barrels, so 150 cases. Not all Napa, 80% Napa, a little bit from the Danville area where I do a little, I've got a little couple of little vineyards I take care of. Moon Boss because of the biodynamics. So I was making wine at a winery, and Andrew, the winemaker, called me and emailed me, and I, of course, didn't respond right away. And I had some fruit that came in, and it was Mourvèdre co-fermented, or, you know, with some Syrah. So he started writing MO, and he's like, oh, Moon Boss. Dave's into biodynamics. He follows the cycles of the moon. I didn't know what I was going to call it. This was one of those barrels of wine I was going to have that I was going to have to figure out what I was going to do with it. I told my wife we should come up with a fun blend that we get to change and just kind of have fun with every year, and then the name just kind of stuck.
Wow. Cheers to your winemaker. Really. She's, I mean, you're doing okay, too. But
yeah. Yeah. Hey.
This is really good. Wow.
Yeah. Jillian was the winemaker at Bonnie Dune for 5 years, so she's had a lot of work with a lot of different wines.
What was the blend again, one more time?
50% Syrah, and then in descending order, Zen Grenache Merlot. Pretty low in alcohol. I use no new oak on this, so I want it to be lively and fruity, and actually a red wine you can drink in the summertime, how we were talking, when it gets a little warmer.
And how much do you make of this again?
150 cases, 6 barrels.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Wow, well done.
So, and this is a... a label that we will probably be able to grow a little bit. I've got a couple different fruit contracts and trying to set up some leasing, but it's, I love it because it's unpretentious. It's just fun wine that tastes great, that has, that savoriness to it.
Is this a 12?
Good question. What do you think it is? It's a non-vintage. One of the barrels was from 2012. The rest is 2013.
You don't get a lot of that very often.
Yeah.
This is really good. And a really stunning finish.
Well, and it's fun, too. I mean, I think if you look at our labels and what we're trying to do, the wine industry right now, people are not so focused on a varietal necessarily. People are willing to try new things. Like, I've had a lot of great response to this wine. And the fact it's, you know, not from Napa or non-vintage, people do the same thing you did. You just taste it and went, that's really great wine. I don't really... I'm willing to look past whatever preconceived notion I had of of vintage.
I think it's rotten to be preconceived in any way, shape, or form, because that just limits you. Considering your time in this business, you know, and now that you've gotten into the idea of selling wine as well, and what makes you crazy about the wine business?
I'm sure every industry is this way, but it's just so relationally driven. I've got friends that are chefs, you know, in Michigan and Texas and Sacramento, and it's fun to hang out with them and watch what they're creating. It's fun to be a part of the food movement, really, that's going on about eating healthier. So all of those things get me excited, and plus I really enjoy drinking wine. The thrill has not gone away since I started and fell in love with it. And it's, for me, it's just, you know, wow, I get to do something I love every day. I get to get up and farm and, you know, got all my stuff done today so we could hang out and drink a little wine in the afternoon. Who gets to say this is work?
Here we are sitting on a beautiful sunny day doing this. This is luck beyond belief, or whatever you want to call it. Karma, God knows what. Dave, do you have a website?
Yes, we have two. Bosswine.com is where you can find our wines. It's under a little construction right now, but you should be able to navigate it.
And that's a single S.
Yes, correct. Single S. BOSWINE.com. And then also harvest-bos.com. That's my vineyard management and consulting website. Both of those, you can get a hold of me, just or even email me, David@BossWine, if you have any questions, and I can easily answer them about wine or biodynamics, and because I love talking about both of them.
And here it is, folks, your chance to talk to the guy who does this, and biodynamics, which people are wanting to learn about, to understand a little bit more about. This is a great opportunity.
Yeah, so the last wine is a 2012 Phoenix Ranch.
I'm sorry. No, I'm just going to sit over this for a minute.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm liking this. Just give me 1 minute.
If you do dump it and have something else, how would you get another glass of it? What would you have to say?
I would like to revisit.
There you go. You got it.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Cheers.
That's a good one, isn't it? So Phoenix Ranch is the first place I started consulting, all biodynamic. Brian Phoenix, great farmer, but he wanted to take the farming a little bit deeper, a little bit further. So we started doing biodynamics, and then I was able to get my hands on some of the fruit, and I just think this is one of the best Syrah sites, maybe in California. It's what the essence of what Syrah should be, I think. So there's no new oak on this, but you get that lavender and the violet, and as it opens up, it just becomes that what Syrah can be. It can be both muscular, but also very elegant at the same time. So yeah, we only do 3 barrels of this too, so it's a pretty small production as well. And I love that size, and it's fun right now, and I think other people would just be hassled by having so many, you know, 1 barrel lots. But for me, it's just fun. You know, I get to learn a lot about the vineyard from making wine. I think that sometimes there's a disconnect there. When the person growing the vines doesn't really like wine or doesn't really pay attention to how the wine turns out. I picked up some new clients consulting-wise, and the first thing I said is, let's try the wines if they're still separate, block by block, and then let's talk about what you want to see to improve, because we got to kind of start there and work our way back, and then we can start taking steps forward. And I think the more you can kind of taste and understand what a wine's trying to do, the better you can understand it. So I think, you know, people that have been making wine from the same vineyards or the same place for a long time usually have a ton of insight into what's really going on. Because I think there's a lot of intention there and a lot of intuition. And biodynamics has a lot to do with observation, right?
Yeah, and everybody I've met who talks about biodynamics is passionate about it. It you know, not just because of the idea of children and everything else, but the idea of what it really brings to the table and what we're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess to sum it all up, you're not really heading back to Michigan too soon, I'm guessing.
No. We'll wait till the lake unfreezes.
It'll never unfreeze.
Yeah, we usually go back in the summer. Yeah, so we'll be back that way in the summer for sure.
This has been great. Dave, I can't thank you enough for taking the time and for pouring your wines. Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming all the way out here up into the hills of Calistoga.
It's been a good time.
Yeah, thank you.
You can also see two short videos taken from this podcast on YouTube. Learn more by visiting Dave's website at bosswine.com. That's Boss with one S.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our intern is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2015.